Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Just want to note before the pod starts that the link to buy our big dog shirt, large canine shirt, is available in the description below. You can also rate all 2019 and 2018 movies in the description below. But if you want to buy a shirt, it's in the link below. That's the easiest way to find it if you're listening right now. Trust me, go click it, buy it, wear it. You'll look probably like a lunatic, but you know what? That's fine. That's great. That's fantastic. All right, start the pod.
To infinity and beyond.
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my new friend.
You'll
shoot your eye out, kid. Say what again? Say what again? I
double dare you, motherfucker.
Say what one more goddamn time.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
You get our son.
Happy birthday, Polly.
Kevin, still chilly?
Lights, camera, bar stool, starts freaking out.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 164 of the Trill Ballins Solo Movie Hour. I'm your host, Trill Ballins. It is just me doing the podcast now. So, we got a big show for you today, and by we, I mean me, because it's just me. And so Toy Story 4 came out. That was pretty good. Did you know that Toy Story 4's Duke Kaboom was introduced in Incredibles 2, according to Screen Rant? What do you think about that, Kit? Oh, I forgot they're gone. Oh, man. I'm so lonely here. I don't know if this is funny or not.
Okay, we're here. Yeah, we're here.
Wow, that was crazy. We like barely made it by the skin of our teeth. Thanks for setting up the podcast, Joe.
What a funny bit. Ken Jack and I just got back from seeing Spider-Man Far From Home.
How's your guys' day?
It was good.
Huh? Pretty good, yeah.
We just saw a movie with Stephen A. Smith. What did you do today?
Oh, was Stephen A. Smith there?
He was.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Ken Jack and I,
our good friend, Richard Brody as well.
Yeah, Richard Brody, good dude. Ken Jack and I, unfortunately, there was a mix-up with the tickets, and we didn't get our media tickets, which sounds very big journalism boys of us, but we got these red tickets, which mean we had to sit anywhere but the closed-off area, which happened to be like 80% of the theater. So Ken Jack and I sat in the front fucking row for that movie. The front
Literally
row.
Literally the very maybe at maximum 15 feet away from the screen.
At front row's gotten better. They're still really bad.
Oh, man, it's still sunk. At first, I was looking at some scenes, and you think Peter Parker's jacked as hell, but now I'm like, damn, his biceps are huge. And I'm like, wait, no, the screen is just distorted because I'm all the way in the left front center of the damn movie theater.
You're getting that Kylo Ren effect. Wouldn't it be like a big torso and tiny, I don't know. All I know is that at one time, I remember sitting in the front row, I felt so close to the screen that I could actually touch it, and I still sat there and watched the movie because I think it was like Phantom, not Phantom Menace, the Revenge of the Sith or one of those movies. And now like with advanced scheduling, a front row is even an option. Let's say you couldn't get tickets to a movie you wanted. I wouldn't even pick that, right? No. Like I would just be like, guess I'm not seeing it today. Guess I'm not seeing it on the day of release. Like, cause no amount of money I don't even know what I'm trying to say, but it's not worth it.
No, there's no situation in which it is worth it. And I know that because we just did it and it was I loved it. I loved Spider-Man Far From Home. You really can't talk about it. It was just awesome. I'll leave it at that. Like in terms of Marvel movies, it's one of the most like spoiler Marvel movies that they've made. And this is the official end of phase 3. I just say I love it. And I have a buddy of mine who didn't love the first one, loves Marvel movies, and loved this one. He just texted me. He goes, that was fucking awesome. So
I am surprised that there does seem to be so much universe continuity happening in this movie.
A lot.
Because like what? Ant-Man was the end of phase two, right?
Ant-Man ended one of the phases, yeah.
Yeah, and that was kind of a soft cap to that phase. And Ant-Man was entertaining, but like nothing huge happened in Ant-Man. Like obviously Ant-Man went on to become a big part of like the solution to the Thanos Infinity Stones. And so, yeah, it's exciting that they're ending this, and this isn't just like a kind of a here's a Spider-Man movie. They're actually incorporating some greater consequences to it. That's the word I'm trying to find.
Yeah, I think they did a good job of that. You're going to enjoy it. I think you specifically, Truro, will like this movie quite a bit. I think it might crack your, maybe not top five, but top 10.
I'm just excited about that Mysterio dome. That's a, and that in terms of cinematic domes, that's a nice dome. You get
a lot of dome. There's a lot of dome in this movie.
Fantastic dome in this movie. Fantastic.
We enjoyed Spider-Man Far From Home a lot. That's all I can really say on it for now. We're going to have a review up Thursday. What's today? The 26th or the 27th? We'll have a review up. But again, you're not going to get much more than what we're saying right now. We are going to review it next week on the pod. So, yeah, that's it on Spider-Man Far From Home for now. Go in without having anything spoiled. Let me just say that. Makes it a better experience, and Jake Gyllenhaal is the fucking man. Confirmed.
He's so good. I'd want him in anything, any project I was doing. He can do it all. He's beautiful and such a good actor. God damn. Yeah. Let's get him on the pod.
Yeah, okay. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Trill book him.
Come on, Jake. He goes to places by his own. Doesn't have a team. So he can come here. That's hang awesome.
I don't know, man. He broke Taylor Swift's heart, and so that's not something I so easily forgive. So maybe this movie will put me back in good graces with them. I'm not so sure.
I think I've told the story before, but we played when he was promoting the boxing movie. What was that? Southpaw.
Eminem, who Eminem was originally supposed to be the titular character. I don't know if he's
no fucking way.
Yes. Yeah. Eminem was supposed to be in Southpaw.
I mean, crazy. But yeah, we played a Taylor Swift song when he came back from commercial for his interview for the movie. And
surprising.
Didn't you say he was cool though? He like rolled in with no posse.
Yeah, no, just in a fucking storm. Him and Oscar Isaac both showed up in winter storms. Actually, Jake Gyllenhaal might not have shown up in a winter storm, but he showed up by himself.
Yeah.
And that's unbelievable because usually people come in with teams of makeup people for the makeup people. So by himself, just a good looking guy, so it doesn't really matter. Doesn't need the team. Let's do an ad read here. Most guys have tried different ways to last longer, but thinking about baseball doesn't always work. The folks at Roman, who continue to advertise with us, an online men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes, a secret to longer lasting sex.
You know what, Jeff? I think we need some background tones for this music.
You're right.
Can you think of a good some good making whoopee music that we should be playing underneath the
anything?
The
put Roman it hold sound up right now pad and put it on the mic.
That's fuck music right there.
Okay. Maybe lower it a little bit. Okay. All right, here we go.
You're not telling me they didn't have Roman in that setting of Mamma Mia?
They definitely did.
In Greece?
They had
Greek. They didn't have... They had Greek, not Roman. Sorry to say. That's why they couldn't figure out who the dad was.
Keep playing everyone the song. Stick with
oh, okay. Okay, keep going. I thought it cut off.
Keep playing. Roman, they're clinically proven wipes or swipes that help you last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, and fast acting, but don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in discreet, unmarked packaging, and each swipes packet is small enough to hide in your wallet whenever you need it. Swipes are great. They won't transfer to your partner, so you can last longer without worrying. They're super easy to use. You take the swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it.
My penis.
When you go to GetRoman.com/lights, you can get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. If you use the link GetRoman.com/lights, that's GetRoman.com/lights. People who use them say they work, and I believe them because they keep advertising and you guys keep buying them. All right. Moving on. News. The news is mildly lackluster this week. Let me just warn you. There's a lot of it, and a lot of it's just very bland. Bond 25 set video. Still one of the strangest productions I've ever seen for a movie. They had this giant premiere, like, event on Periscope where people thought they were going to reveal the title, and they just confirmed all of the people in the movie that we already knew. They're like, well, it's Rami Malek. Like, we know. And then Daniel Craig hurt himself. And then there was another incident that I don't want to get into where someone was arrested for setting up, like, cameras in the women's bathroom on set. Really, whoa. It's very fucking strange what's going on there. But they put out a set video behind the scenes, and it looks cool. It's in Jamaica, and the setting is neat. The colors are neat. There's, like, a dance vibe going on. Jeffrey Wright's there, always looking cool. I don't know what else to get out of that. Again, the promotion for this continues to be a bit strange.
It, you know, like when you see, you watch one of those trailers for a video game from E3, but it's a trailer for a game that's not coming out till 2023. That's what this felt like.
Stranding.
Yeah, this felt like kind of an abstract, here's the general vibe of the movie. Do what you want with it sort of trailer, except this movie's supposed to come out next year. That said, I really did like it. I like the vibe of it, but, you know, Jamaica's got to be one part because Bond movies typically have, like, multiple places, right? Like, that's they jump around from place to place. Jamaica's one part. What was it? What was the last time in Spectre?
Germany.
I forget. Oh, that was, you know, so it's one place. I like it. It was a nice, you know, even that silhouette of James Bond holding that long ass silenced PP.
That was a harpoon gun.
As a harpoon gun.
Isn't that sick as hell? We're back to harpoon guns.
I feel like a regular pistol would be better.
Didn't the Sean Connery Bond use a harpoon gun? I thought that was sick as hell.
I don't know, man. I'm not a seasoned James Bond expert. I started at GoldenEye. I'll just leave you with that one. The video game was cool, so I watched a movie. That's how I got into it.
If they're in Jamaica, that they're going to get Miami James Bond with Bond wearing that cream-colored suit that everyone in Miami wears, but Dade County wears for some reason. I can't wait. I cannot wait at all. It's going to look so cool.
Yeah, there's a few standards with the Daniel Craig James Bond. I feel like him. I mean, if it's back in a setting with beaches, then I want him back in that tight ass trunk swimsuit, looking shredded as hell. And then Daniel Craig wearing a pair of aviators is always a good look. So I feel like we're going to get that. We're going to be okay.
You think it's going to be aviators and not Ray-Bans? I'll bet you $1 right now it's Ray-Bans. Or not Ray-Bans. Wayfarers. Wayfarers.
Oh, yeah. It's like aviators are a style. Have you ever seen him in Wayfarers?
I think no, but like Miami Caribbean is like a Wayfarer look. I think he's going to go Wayfarers for this one.
I think aviators transcend all times and places. They're pilot glasses. Right. Pilots go everywhere.
Place
right?
the bet. Place the bet.
I feel that dollar bet is set. I feel if you look up Daniel Craig James Bond and all the pictures he's wearing sunglasses, I'll look it up right now. Most of them are going to be aviators.
Yeah, and that's why this is why the Bond 25 is the perfect sign up for Daniel Craig. It's going to be like when he retires, he puts down the aviators and picks up the Wayfarers, and he's like, "I'm done with this Q for good." And Ben Winshaw will cry, and then that'll be it. That's all she wrote.
There are no pictures of him wearing sunglasses. I've just completely made up this concept of him wearing sunglasses in my mind.
I found a picture of Daniel Craig in the Caribbean, and he's getting on a seaplane, and he's wearing the cream suit that I was talking about, and he's wearing square glasses, not aviators. Look at that. Your argument is falling apart in your hands. I don't even remember what James Bond that was. What was the last time he was on a seaplane?
I don't know, man. I feel like we should probably get off this topic for the sake of our listeners. I know some people are probably down with it. But
moving on. Annabelle comes home. I told you, news, tough. We are going to review Annabelle at some point. Actually, next week. Oh, we're not reviewing Spider-Man next week. We're reviewing Spider-Man 2 weeks. Yeah. Annabelle and yesterday we're reviewing next week. And Annabelle apparently is just not terrible, I guess. Audiences seem to like it. If the film falls flat as horror, it succeeds little better as symbolic coming-of-age story. The lesson imparted is about the importance of playing it safe. That's a negative review. A positive one, it's a mostly effective thrill ride of lo-fi scares, and the script early on dispenses with the most obvious question, why not just throw Annabelle away or destroy her? That would only make things worse, the Warrens explained. Okay, so that actually is not that positive. This is supposed to be a positive one. What follows is excellent, uncomplicated, and well well-wrought House of Horrors fun. Okay, that's positive. It's the best of the Annabelle movies overall. A smart, controlled film made with considerable integrity. All right, they got a little better as I kept reading. 65% of Rotten Tomatoes, 74% audience score. Again, we haven't seen it yet. We're going to talk about it next week.
It seems like all the movies that the Child's Play posters were trying to kill in the posters ended up being good.
That's
right.
Interesting.
Two for two. Toy Story, which was a layup. And then this one, maybe it's not good, but I'm shocked that this one isn't bad. But we get a lot of Patrick Wilson, right?
We do. Again, I haven't seen it, but I would imagine we do.
The more we get a Patrick Wilson, Vera Farmiga in these movies, the better off they're going to be. So I'm actually looking forward to this one. This sounds, Annabelle, yes, you can come home, folks.
You can finally come home, just like Spider-Man. What was the joke from the first one? Homecoming, just like Annabelle.
Big homecoming. Far from home, Annabelle comes home.
You know, it's the circle.
We're working on something here. All right, let's keep it going. Can't say
keep,
no.
Keep
say yes, and Daniel. Yes, and welcome to LCB Improv.
Daniel Craig sunglasses. That's my noun.
Where does it rank between the two movies we're reviewing next week, though? What would you rather see, this or Yesterday, the Beatles movie?
Yesterday,
and we were talking about Yesterday before. Yesterday is just not my jam because I'm not a huge. Like,
I know. I didn't know you had no interest in seeing Yesterday.
It's not really shocked. not really my spiel because number one, I'm not enough of a music guy where that holds interest to me. And like we've said it a lot when discussing Yesterday, I don't think there's any musical artist where if you sent me into a universe where they didn't exist, I could not profit off it in any way, shape, or form. Like there's no chance. I can't remember the lyrics to like even my most favorite songs. Like it's. So it just doesn't, I think, hold enough of like a sympathetic nerve in my stupid brain. So it's not a lot of interest for me.
No, what I think you would do is you would be born like memorizing Old Town Road, but you'd be born in like 1982, or you'd be put in 1982.
I don't hate that. I don't hate that one bit. I think I'd be better off if I was in a universe where. I think a TV show didn't exist or a movie didn't exist because I can remember like TV show scripts like word for word and movies word for word, but like I can't do shit with music. My brain is so bad.
Dude, I'd love to be put in a world where the Matrix didn't exist and I came up with the Matrix.
Right? Guys, listen, there's two albino twins, but they have dreadlocks.
All the cars are General Motors products.
Yes. That's fucking
and that's how you know you're in the Matrix.
That's the tell. That's like the canary in the coal mine was the GM product. Cars on the highway.
You brought up Toy Story. I want to move on to that. Toy Story box office, not as great as expected. It was supposed to make $200 million. Then it was estimated to $150 million. It actually made $118 million in its first 3 days. Still good. Not great. And that shows a little bit of the lack of bulletproof from Disney.
Yeah. This has been a bad year for tickets and people going to the movies. It's been down. It hasn't been horrible. And this Toy Story, for what could possibly be the final hurrah in the Toy Story universe, it did seem a little subdued. The push for it. And a part of me didn't know if that's because they plan to do a 5 or just want to leave the door open or if they just, I don't know, but you're right now that you mention it.
Yeah. Box office has just been down across the board, but I don't know if that's just because like timing, I feel like is everything with box office, right? Like you need to have like significant space between giant blockbuster films. And they haven't had that too much this year. There's been like a lot of like week to week releases. And I don't think that's productive for the overall sales.
It's definitely disappointing for Toy Story, but I do know Lion King had a very, I mean, Kendrick, you didn't even get fucking Lion King tickets.
Yeah. I'm just going to go to the screening / premiere. Not a big deal. Probably just stick with that. Maybe go a different weekend.
But again, the point is like, they were not easy to get. It was a pain in the ass getting Lion King.
The point is that I'm going to see it before everyone else. That's okay. I'm trying to get.
Good point. Good point. But hypothetically, if you had tried to get tickets for a second screening, it was a pain in the ass. And they did have a lot of ticket sales. Fandango's like biggest ever outside of Star Wars and Marvel movies, which is, I guess, not too surprising. So we'll see. I'm curious if Lion King does great and Toy Story 4 doesn't. I don't know if it's the demand of Toy Story or it could be marketing. They did finally reveal what Donald Glover and Simba together sound like and look like. And that was interesting because they really haven't shown much of that movie, but the marketing presence seems kind of high. And I'm imagining that once Spider-Man clears, Marvel Studios will kind of step aside a bit and allow Disney to pump the shit out of Lion King. I imagine that's what's going to happen. Go ahead.
Toy Story. So Toy Story, the original opening weekend was 29 million. And that was a night. This was Toy Story. Yeah. Toy Story 1. And this was what, in 95? Toy Story 2 was 57. Toy Story 3 was 110. So it's not too far off. Now you adjust that for inflation, obviously. It's still better than that, but of course, like, you know, it's bigger and better, and total box office is up since those time frames. So it's kind of weird. I mean, it doesn't seem like that big of a disappointment, right? To idiots like us.
Yeah. I mean, yes and no, because I do think that, well, to idiots like us, yes. And like, I'm not sure they're going to be too disappointed, but for them to hit below their mark is, it's surprising for the one studio that seems like they're kind of untouchable.
Yeah, well, it did get 55.7% of the domestic percentage of worldwide, which, I'm trying to get better understanding these movie statistics, which is, it might be underwhelming when you control 40% of all the movie releases out there. So I don't know.
It's true. It's very true. Disney.
37% of the gross here, right? Or something like that for Disney, 37% of the gross? That's nuts.
One of their movies made over $2 billion, and Marvel made $1 billion. I'm imagining Lion King will make the same.
Did you guys know Tim Allen was in Toy Story 4?
Why? Did you not realize until afterwards? We'll get to that.
The tool time guy.
What? Remember Buzz Lightyear guy?
What'd you draw?
My favorite thing ever. Topo Gijo. Yes.
That stupid mouse's name.
The best thing ever was in Home Improvement, the storyline near the end of the run where Mark was a goth.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. The youngest kid, Mark, Home Improvement goth. That's like the third Google suggestion that shows up. And it was like Tim Allen and his, you know, Tim Allen way trying to deal with the. Food poisoning.
That's true. You haven't mentioned that you are. This is a sick game for you.
I feel a lot better, but Monday night I woke up. Monday morning, Tuesday morning, whatever. I woke up and let's just say I did a little diarrhea on the potty. And let's just say while I was doing this, I had to barf. So I leaned over and then vomited in the tub, which had all of my sweet, precious little baby girl's baby bath toys in it. And so those all got thrown out.
Oh,
I mean, that was $7.99 on Amazon. But it was a rough day. But you know, like when you still don't feel 100%, but you felt 10% one day and you feel 70% the next day. And that increase makes it feel like you just like regained life. That's where I'm at right now.
That is all I will say. The day after you finally recover is incredible. It's not worth it, but it is incredible.
No, it's like when you slam your foot on something and you start like you get over the peak and you start to feel the pain subside and you're like, oh, okay, this is manageable.
Bundy ever have a goth arc on Married with Children? I feel like he would get like obsessed with like some anime goth chick and just like suddenly become a goth. I feel like that's a Bud Bundy arc if I've ever heard one.
No, I think the goth mainstream prevalence was a little after the run of Married with Children. I really do.
That ended in like 97 or something.
Taking that aside, I don't think Bud Bundy was the goth type. I think he was a very horny, creepy character.
Yes. Yeah, but that's why I think that he would have done it because like he became obsessed with like some sort of like rocker punk goth chick and was like, oh, I'm a goth now because I want to impress her. That's a Bud arc. You got to admit, that's a Bud Bundy arc.
Maybe a one episode arc. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Wait, was this like a multi, like a season long arc for the Tool Time Kid?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's got for more than one episode, my friend.
Damn, that's awesome. I never watched Tool Time, so.
These were the issues people were, you know, you got this new show called Euphoria, which is supposed to be about, you know, high school these days. And then back in the day, Home Improvement tackled the tough issue of high schoolers with my son has a chain wallet. Help.
How do I do? I think when I was a kid, I was watching Invader Zim, which is significantly more demented than Tool Time. So I don't know how that helped parents deal with their kids, but didn't help me.
All right. So that's how we got to that from Tim Allen being in Toy Story.
Tim Allen.
Which we will talk about Tim Allen's involvement with Toy Story 4 very shortly. Ryan Murphy's Netflix movie, the musical, The Prom. Well, he's going to be producing it. It's going to be involving Meryl Streep, Nicole Kidman. That's just two of them. Many more. Ariana Grande, Awkwafina, Keegan-Michael Key. I already mentioned Nicole Kidman, Andrew Rannells, and last but not least, Trill, who is the last person in this movie? Do you know?
James Corden.
That's correct.
Yes, I didn't even read the news.
Okay. But you had to know who it is just based on how I set that up for you.
He's very musically oriented, and I feel like this is right up his alley. And actually, I've been critical of Ryan Murphy in the past, but he is very good at one season of television.
If I'm Ryan Murphy and I'm very good at that, and you walk up to me and you say, "Hi, your first seasons are all fucking incredible. Some of the best TV. The rest, not great." I'd go, "Okay, fair." I'd say, "All right, I'm cool with that. If you think I'm shit after season one, that's fine. But you've acknowledged that I make brilliant season ones over and over again." So that's basically what's going to happen here. It's a one-off. It's going to be great.
I saw that there is being written by Matthew Sklar, and I was like, is he one of the Sklar brothers? And apparently he's not.
Oh, I was going to say, holy shit. From Cheap Seats on ESPN Classic and other things.
It was a good show.
It was a good show. They just commented on really weird sports.
That was YouTube before YouTube. Or Twitch before Twitch.
That's a good point. There's still a couple floating around on YouTube where they go and they commentate on the old weird sports. Like they did American Gladiator, I think, once, but there's one of them talking about mini golf that is so fucking funny. It's like the Putt-Putt Championship. Hilarious. Look it up on YouTube. Cheap Seats Putt-Putt Championship. Very funny.
Did you guys watch the Steph Curry, the Holy Moly show, the golfing one? It's pretty good. I really thought I was going to suck, but it turned out to be pretty funny.
Yeah, I have not yet, and because it's mini golf, and I like mini golf, but you actually laughed?
Yeah, I had there's a few moments where I genuinely laughed because other people were in pain, but that's like kind of the vibe all the time. I think the problem that they're running into is that they're kind of, there's a rip-off MXC vibe to it, if that makes sense. Like, what's the show, Wipeout? Like, you know, Wipeout tried to rip off MXC, and like, they succeeded.
Complete
but like, this show, it feels like they're kind of trying to... This show is kind of like doing an in-between of like MXC and like trying to do like wholesome golf shit and like doesn't necessarily succeed, but there's definitely laugh out loud moments. Oh, and like as for the show, or the movie, I think the actual conceit of the play is pretty funny because it's supposed to be like a bunch of washed up Broadway people that are like being really nice. And like I think they're like supposed to be doing like LGBTQ like outreach, but as a form of trying to boost their public persona. And that to me sounds like an episode of It's Always Sunny. That's great. I like that concept. I love the cast. Ariana Grande, fantastic voice. And Andrew Rannells. I can't get enough of Andrew Rannells. I would love him in a billion more things. And a simple favor, like he stole the goddamn show. There were so many actors and actresses in that movie, and he stole it for me. I love that guy.
Original run of Book of Mormon. That's where I first really got to know who that guy was. And he's fucking hilarious. He's great in everything he does. Also, Josh Gad was in that original run as well. I'm obligated to mention that. That's Ryan Murphy's new thing, Prom. All right, moving on. Back to news. I don't really know what to read much on this one, but I just want to read the headline because it's hilarious. Sean Astin wanted to direct a Fantastic Four movie with Christina Aguilera as Sue Storm. What the fuck?
I love it.
Was he going to be Mr. Fantastic, though?
Yeah, was he going to be in it?
I don't know.
Do we have that information?
I don't honestly want to read much more on that. That's pure enough as it is. I don't want to know more.
Has Sean Astin directed anything?
Like, I don't think
what's
so.
his?
I know.
You don't think he's dabbled in a little directorial
shorts
magic? Because he's been, I mean, he did Stranger Things, but before that, he's just kind of been here or there, right? So film.
That wasn't directing.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, I felt like
an episode of TV. He did an episode of Angel. People like Angel.
That's true. I feel like he was on Bones.
Okay, that's 2003. Yeah, he might have been. I think you're confusing him with David Boreanaz, but they might be the same person.
No, I felt like Sean Astin could have just popped up in Bones.
He's been on 24, Alphas, Angels, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Let's see, Franklin and Bash. Let's see, Law and Order. He was also on Monk.
He was on Hercules, but not the good Hercules with like All Live Sorbo. He was on the bad Hercules, which was like the random TV miniseries in 2005, not like the weird New Zealand one.
Oh, did you know, Trill, that he was in an episode of Big Bang Theory this year as Dr. Pemberton?
Good for him, oh, man. My God. That show, I still need to watch the finale of that show.
That sounds like it's the name of James Corden's cat. Dr. Pemberton, come get your catnip.
Little Mr. Dr. Pemberton, looking out the window while I have my coffee in the morning. Okay. Video games.
He's a method actor and just has to sing to his cats.
Sean Astin was in Kingdom Hearts. Sean Astin's been doing work. Okay, I'll give him that. I just felt like there was a time where I just didn't see him in that many movies. And so I didn't know if he was directing some stuff. But it looks like he was in a lot of direct-to-DVD movies in the early 10s, the early part of this decade, which is fine.
He played Shazam in the TV, in the Justice League cartoon, I guess. Good for him. We like Shazam here.
Yeah, and we also like his, is Skylar Astin his brother?
I don't know.
I don't feel like he is, but if you told me that, I would believe you.
Because the name is so like unique, because it looks like Austin, but it's not. No, huh. No, okay, no relation. Enough.
All right, I would have thought that.
I think it's Olivia Austin you're thinking of. It's definitely Olivia Austin you're thinking of, right?
Yeah, should I Google that?
Yes. No, don't. Actually, don't. Never mind.
All right.
If you're at home, don't Google it.
Moving on. Two more pieces of news, kind of. One's a new trailer game we're going to play. Flash Gordon animated movie in the works from Taika Waititi. I like that. I'm into that idea.
Yeah, that'd be good. Flash Gordon's campy, right? Like it started off. That's what George Lucas was into. That inspired his love of space operas, and so I think that'll play right into Taika Waititi's strengths. Is he'll give him enough room to have like some of the similar space type vibes he was going for in Thor Ragnarok, and then also. Enough of the humor, enough of the leeway to do the humor we like him for.
Yeah, there's like a cool lore to the actual character of Flash Gordon. And like you said, there is room for humor. You can be campy. You can be like sarcastic. You can be like, I think more, you can add a lot of cutting edge humor to the character. I don't know how much experience he has with animated projects, which I don't know if that'll change the way he makes it, but I am super excited. We're like probably the number one Taika Waititi podcast on earth. I'm comfortable saying that.
Yeah, I like this. I don't know much about Flash Gordon, though. My only two main exposure points to Flash Gordon are the Queen song and soundtrack.
Yep.
And Ted.
Yeah, I was going to say Ted.
Pretty much those two things. That's how I know Flash Gordon.
But
I feel like I know enough from those two things to kind of get the vibe of Flash Gordon.
That's what I was about to bring up. I was about to bring up that the campiness was played up a lot from Ted. Like, I feel like that's where our generation knows, for better or worse, knows the campiness of Flash Gordon.
Well, Flash Gordon's a dude who's going out, like, about to day drink. He's a superhero wearing a tank top. He looks like he's about to party. So, like, right there, you know, you got this big muscle-bound hunk, He-Man-looking guy. And I think that works very well for campy.
I think it's perfect. I think his fit is amazing, actually. Who's the bad guy from Flash Gordon again?
Zod?
Bald dude. No, Zod is Superman.
No, Zoltan, right?
I don't think that's right either. That is right either. Fuck. Fuck. I don't know.
Is in the extended Queen Flash Gordon song. He gets they put some dialogue in there from him. And I feel like they don't do that that much. You remember when soundtracks used to have dialogue and the music from the movies? You get on the soundtrack? They don't do that anymore. It's probably for the better.
Who do you think voices Flash Gordon? Or do they have that decided?
I think you get a Chris to do it.
One of the Chris's?
Yeah, just get a Chris to do it. Chris
that's the casting call. Must be a Chris.
Just one of the four Chris's. One of the four Chris's of the Chris-pocalypse.
Chris Kattan walks in.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Chris Kattan.
Please, here's the door.
Don't look at Mango. Okay, but people shit on Chris Kattan, but when he got up and ate that apple standing on a bar stool, that was pretty fucking funny. When he's Mr. Peepers.
I mean, Chris, I remember that.
I think Chris Kattan's funny.
Yeah, but his last I associate him with what was the movie he did? It was
A Night at the Roxbury.
Corky Romano?
Corky Romano.
Hell yeah.
Corky Romano ruled.
Did it though?
Yes. Yes. 100% yes. It was amazing.
I don't feel like it did.
He did a movie called Adam and Steve.
Oh, man.
No.
Yes, he has money where he can. What other Chris's could show up?
He also was in Rachel Ray versus Guy Fieri Celebrity Cook-Off.
Yo, Christopher Maloney has a dumper. You ever see that? Have you ever seen it?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Especially paired with those 32-inch leg-opening pants he's wearing.
My God.
He's got a 34-inch inseam and a 32-inch leg opening. You could drop a bowling ball through those legs. And then he's got these Thanksgiving yams just poking out that woolen poly blend.
I'm surprised it's not stretching at the fucking seams.
But the Chris's are Pratt, Hemsworth, Evans, and who's the fourth Chris?
Who'd you say? Pratt, Pine.
Yeah, Pine. That's right. Yeah, just get a Chris. Chris would be perfect.
You know what's weird? In the overall Chris rankings, if you asked me 2 years ago, I would have, I think, Pratt number one overall with like the biggest potential. He's now like slowly falling. He might be last place. I think the other Chris's have overtaken him.
Yeah, I don't know. They're all about the same to me. I think Evans has a little more goodwill because of his recent cap sign off. Goodwill for me right now. And then Hemsworth is, you know, it's fine. The Chris's are all neck and neck.
I think if I had to rank him right now, I would have Hemsworth one. I think Pine as an actor is number two, then Evans, then Pratt. Like, he's fallen a lot for me recently.
Well, just because he's gotten so entrenched in the Jurassic universe, right?
Yeah, that's no good.
I don't think it did him any favors. I think it made him a lot of money. I don't think it did him any favors in terms of, like, where we... All Chris is great. Where we rank the Chris's, though.
I think the first one was fine. I think the second one was like, okay, like,
enough.
We need to reevaluate.
Just stop. Let's rethink the process here. But it's okay, because the next one might have those human-dinosaur hybrids.
It takes place at a Tanger outlet mall off of a highway somewhere.
That's how they've assimilated in life? They just go to...
Just tearing up the Lee/Russell Athletic/Vanity Fair/Hanes combo store.
This is the only podcast that could turn Flash Gordon into Jurassic Park into immediately Tanger outlet discussion. Just saying. Well, it's where you get your Tanger talk. all right. One more thing.
Meet me at the Tanger Outlet Food Court for ass kicking.
One last thing, and then we're going to get into our reviews. Four trailers. I'm going to read the synopsis. You're going to give me one word. One word. You can give me two, but probably just one word what you think about the trailer. The first movie, The Good Liar, starring Helen Mirren, Ian McKellen. Career con artist Roy Courtney can hardly believe his luck when he meets well-to-do widow Betty McLeish online. As Betty opens her life and home to him, Roy is surprised to find himself caring about her, turning what should be a cut-and-dry swindle into the most treacherous tightrope walk of his life.
British.
Okay, that's a good reply. Also, we lost Ken Jack. He's coming back. Don't worry. We're going to move on to the next one. Queen and Slim, starring Daniel Kaluuya and Jodie Turner Smith. A seemingly routine traffic stop forever alters the lives of a young man and woman on a first date. Very brutal looking movie, but looks pretty deep. Looks pretty good.
Intense.
Okay, that's good. Very, very deep word. Next up, black and I actually Googled black and blue synopsis, thinking that would give me anything more than the actual definition of a black and blue. That was tough. Should have checked that one. Oh, man. Here we go. Black and Blue, an action thriller about a rookie cop played by Naomi Harris who inadvertently captures the murder of a young drug dealer on her body camera. After realizing that the murder was committed by corrupt cops, she teams up with the one person from her community who is willing to help her, Tyrese Gibson, as she tries to escape both the criminals out for revenge and the police who are desperate to destroy the incriminating footage.
Fur coat. This one had a really badass fur coat in it.
That's good. Okay.
At least it was like a fur lined coat. You'd watch the trailer. It's a cool looking coat.
It is a cool both this really trailer is. This trailer and the previous one Queen and Slim debuted during the BET Awards and very good trailers. Anything with Daniel Kaluuya is going to get me hooked. And last but not least, The Current War, starring Benedict Cumberbatch, Michael Shannon, Nicholas Holt, Catherine Waterston, Tom Holland, many people. This is what the movie's about. Thomas Edison and George Westinghouse, the greatest inventors of the industrial age, engage in a battle of technology and ideas that will determine whose electrical system will power the new century. Backed by J.P. Morgan, Edison dazzles the world by lighting Manhattan. But Westinghouse, aided by Nikola Tesla, sees fatal flaws in Edison's direct current design. Westinghouse and Tesla bet everything on risky and dangerous alternating current. Edison played by Cumberbatch, Westinghouse played by Michael Shannon, Tesla played by Nicholas Holt. And by the way, this is like fucking old Avengers right here. This is like old, rich inventor Avengers.
Star-studded? Star-studded? I mean, the whole electricity war thing, I don't know. I want to. That's something I'm always like. I want to get the real story about because y'all hear people call Thomas Edison a fraud, and they say Tesla was the real inventor, and then some people say no, Tesla didn't do it. So maybe this will shed some light on that. I did want to point out Lena Waithe is doing the screenplay for Queen and Slim.
Oh, I didn't realize. Oh, yeah. Okay, I didn't know that.
And I think that's always cool because she's been awesome in Master of None. She had her own episode and it was really good, the Thanksgiving episode. And I always like it when screenplay, you know, we've seen, I think, actors or actresses have screenplays and typically they're really interesting.
Okay. I did not realize Lena White was a part of that. Yeah, Lena White is great. Also, remember Lena White was in Ready Player One? So
yeah. Weird. What was the character's name? It was on HBO the other day. I don't remember.
It was a big guy. That was the name. That was the name of the avatar. Big guy, I think. Just take my word. Okay. That's it for trailer talk. All right, time for our reviews. These are going to be spoiler reviews. It just is what it is. Packed show. We want to get into it. Don't want to beat around the bush. Child's Play first, then Toy Story 4. If you don't want Child's Play spoiled for you, skip ahead right here. We're going to have you skip ahead to the Toy Story part where you can make it. It's like a fucking choose your own adventure. All right, here we go. Child's Play came out last week, I think. Last week? Yeah, it came out last week. It's been out for about a week. After moving to a new city, young Andy Barclay receives a special present from his mother, a seemingly innocent buddy with an I. Right, Trill?
Yeah, it stands for Internet.
Yep.
Bonsai buddy.
That becomes his best friend. When the doll suddenly takes on a life of its own, Andy unites with other neighborhood children to stop the sinister toy from wreaking bloody havoc. We've been clamoring for more movies with children leading the way. We got another one. Aubrey Plaza's in the lead role as Karen Barclay, along with Gabriel Bateman, who plays Andy. Brian Tyree Henry plays Detective Mike Norris. Mark Hamill voices Chucky. Tim Matheson is the CEO. Henry Caslin, Tim Matheson, the vice president from West Wing. John Hoynes.
Oh, well, Mr. Sorkin, thank you.
The character names are the same. from the original Chucky, but it's not the same Chucky. It's a completely different Chucky. Audience gave it 60% Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, 62% from the critics. Metacritic, I think, is right around there. I give it, I need to think about it again. I watched it for a second time this week. I've seen it twice now. It's not good. Like, it's not a good movie. I was shocked by things, and I think that intrigued me a little bit to say I didn't really dislike it, but it's not very good. It's not a very good movie, but I didn't dislike it in a sense that I like really hated it and want to skewer it. I just didn't really like it that much.
I gave it a 70, Jeff. I liked it. I'm buttering this one. This one was ridiculous. Okay, thank you. This one was ridiculous. I thought that it was over the top. I felt it was very self-aware. I don't think they went as heavy-handed on the technology elements as they could have gone. It was on par with this last season of Black Mirror, so that gives you any indication. The major thing is Mark Hamill really only – I felt like he only got to be Mark Hamill in the last 10 minutes of the movie. That's the only time he got a really psycho monologue. It reminded me a lot of his work in The Joker, except not as jokery. I'm the Joker, baby. And I mean, the performances were mostly stand-ins, but for a horror slasher film, it felt like a movie from the 80s. I liked it. I dug it. The other thing that was really weird is like some of the characters that died, they really set them up to be bad people. So it was like, am I supposed to be rooting for Chucky here or not? And then like one death was just like straight up a good person. But it was all over the board. It was a mess in some parts, but like, it had some really gory scenes. I thought the scenes where it was doing like the mouth movements and he was talking to Andy and like doing the creepy mouth thing, I really liked that. Like, I liked a lot of the shit in this movie, and it doesn't make sense, but I don't think it's as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I agree with that last part, probably more so than anything you said. And that's not like a slight of you. Like, that is the part that I think stuck out the most. Is I really wanted. That's why I'm still like teetering on my score. Like, I kind of want to give it a little higher, but the issues I had with it, like, they're pretty glaring.
They made Chucky so ugly as a consumer product that it like, why would anyone want to buy that? That was the glaring thing. It's like creepy from the get-go. It's this doll that controls your whole house. Like, why would you ever want this? And I love that part because it set it up in this alternate reality where stuff just doesn't make sense.
I gave it a hard 56. I don't think I'll be changing that. I think that it was just essentially an extremely, and I got to put emphasis on this, extremely gory episode of Black Mirror that didn't really have too much of a payoff. Had a better cast than most episodes, or actually probably an on-par cast for most episodes of Black Mirror. I like Brian Tyree Henry. I like him in almost everything he's in. Aubrey Plaza, I mean, they make a point to tell you, like, she had the kid when she was 16 to say, like, yeah, just so you don't have to complain about her being too young to be a mom. The kid was okay, like nothing. All of his friends stunk. They were just intolerable in every scene they were in. I did like them using the vice president from West Wing as the spokesman for Chucky. I forget the actor's name, but that was kind of cool. I agree with what you're saying, Trill. Like, I think they were kind of setting you to be on Chucky's side at first because he's like killing all people who are bad. And you're like, okay, it's a vigilante Chucky. I can get down with that. But then I think he's transitioned from being vigilante Chuck into bad Chuck too quick. I think you need more like a, you need more of a, too much more, you need a little more of a slide. And it was too much of a, it was straight, it was 0 to 100 for Chuck.
Too much of a Chuck rush.
Okay, but counterpoint. Yeah. Chucky stabs a mascot buddy doll wearing a gigantic, terrifying, hideous buddy head, at which point the mask comes off and then sprays an entire front row full of children with blood. Like, that was just was over the edge. And they went for it, and I appreciated that.
They did, but man, my score.
Bad.
Bad, not good. It fit in.
This felt like a B movie. It felt like they're trying to make a B movie, and I enjoyed it for that fact.
I wish
Chucky / Buddy had more lines that weren't just "I'm your buddy forever," whatever the song was.
I'm bumping up 5. I'm going. The more I think about it and talk with, because I haven't talked to anyone about this movie, I'm bumping it up. Just because they went for it and for what it is, I'm going to go with a 63 on this. I'm going to go with a 63 on this. Just because they did go for it. And to be fair, I said I would try to review it in that sense as well, like I did with Godzilla, and they went for what they wanted it to be. But I do, I think, Ken Jack, you bring up another great point, is that it was rushed. Like, it felt rushed, but then there was parts where I was bored because it just became very cliche slashery too. Like, that's kind of a weird combo. It's a weird combo to be like, man, they rushed that storyline, .. that I'm also kind of bored by now. And, like, gore for me only goes so far. It's gory. Like, Kendrick, you watched it on a squid screeners. You were watching a screener today. I looked over right when the blood sprayed on that little girl in the front row in the mall.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the part where the guy gets his dick and balls shredded up by the table saw.
It's a gory movie.
They made that guy that was a landlord character.
Yeah, like a landlord or yeah, super, yeah, yeah.
Big creeper. Yeah, they I don't know. I liked it. I can't explain it. I totally get if you thought this movie was a pile of shit, but it felt like I was watching an ode to shitty 80s slasher movies.
Let me just say, it's definitely not a pile of shit. For certain, not a pile of shit. But it's better than I thought it would be. It's just still not good.
Yeah, they did what they could. The other thing that was kind of weird, and I think we knew this going in, was like the origin story of the Chucky doll itself is way different from the original mainline Child's Play series, in that this one, apparently the murderous tendencies are coded into the doll itself from a disgruntled employee.
Yes. So can you explain that? Yeah. Someone's listening, doesn't want to see it.
Yeah. So in the original Child's Play movies, Chucky is possessed by the soul or whatever of somebody, I think, who's killed on death row, or he was a murderer or a psychopath or whatever. I don't know how it got in there, but his soul got transported in Chucky. So he was a murderous sentient doll, right? So he was a human soul and this doll murdered. This one, he's just a AI. He's an AI who's learning, and learning kind of makes him want to kill. And yeah, so, you know, it's deep societal commentary. Like when he was watching that movie and then he picked up the knife. That was a joke. It's not that deep. But it was enjoyable. I'm not sure Chucky's just
that's what Chucky, you would get if he was actually looking
Chucky's
internet.
Browsing Andy's browser history. Oh no.
What is browsers?
So it's God. if you think about it, it's way different in that sense of, like, you know, one was about a serial killer in some of these movies trying to find a new body, and so he had an end goal, and this one is just something that is messed up AI. And I feel like somehow it's easier to explain the logistics of a serial killer's soul being transported into a child's doll than it is to explain the AI angle, because then, you know, they kill Chucky, but if he's in the system, he's not really dead, is he? And we see that at the end with the tease. There's still some defective dolls in storage or whatever. Oh, and they're going ahead with the Buddy 2 rollout. They're just postponing it a little bit.
Yeah. I don't love the original Chucky. I don't. And I don't, like, call it a classic. Like, it's classic in a sense of that it's a classic villain and recognized, but I don't love the original Chucky. Like, all those old horror classics I really enjoy. Like, when they first came out, like, they all, like, whether it be Friday the 13th, Halloween, Nightmare, like, classics. This is a classic recognizable character. But I also think this premise, and maybe it's recency bias because it's a newer age technology thing, I like this premise better, but I just don't think the movie was executed perfectly. Because there was stuff there that I liked. Like, there were enjoyable things. Like, I like the conceit. I like the concept. I just don't like the progression of the character. Which I don't mean I need a 3-hour progression of Chucky, but the way it starts out, it felt rushed. But again, I'll say it again, felt rushed. But then when it gets into the slasher stuff, I was just kind of bored by what was happening. Like, nothing, like cutting people's faces off and shit, that's one thing. But then, like, when it begins to just, like, become that slasher cliche, I don't care anymore.
Well, TTK was way too high in this movie. Okay. For those of you who haven't played Call of Duty, it's time to kill. And so very high TTK. I feel like it was 30 or 40 minutes before we got the first human death. You know, Chucky did kill a cat, which I guess, I want to revise my statement of saying Chucky's killing people you're rooting for because killing that, that's bad. But Chucky did get
shitty cat.
Okay. All right. But still, I mean, I happen to like cats, whatever, especially musical cats. I still feel like the Chucky came pretty creepy out of the box. If I could have done one major thing differently in this movie is I would have had him be less creepy and have a maybe a slower progression to dementedness. Because the second Andy got this doll, he was standing over his bed, basically eyes open, saying, "I love you."
I don't know. Just not a Chucky guy. I think it's like you were saying, Jeff. It's like it's a very respected and classic horror movie and extremely iconic. It's just it's not something that I've ever necessarily connected with. I never even really had dolls growing up, like G.I. Joe's, sure, but like not a doll guy. I don't know. I just I've never been scared by Chucky. I'm like, I could just throw this thing out or punch it, or I think I said it in one of the other episodes, smack this fucker with a baseball bat. True. Why should I be scared?
One thing I did realize between Child's Play and Toy Story 4 is they are very creepy doll centric, heavy creepy doll movies, both of them.
Yeah. Well, wait, I do want to pause. Teddy Ruxpin, did you ever have one?
Yeah, I did. I had the Teddy Ruxpin. My mom used to get pissed at me because I'd want to hold its mouth shut while it was talking. And then it slowed down the tape recorder, actually. So then Teddy Ruxpin
would talk
like this. Anyway, I love this murder movie.
I think he was slow.
I don't know. This movie was so stupid. It was good. I had a lot of fun in this.
Well, Trill, first off, let me preface it. We didn't love it. Like I didn't love it, though. I had to be a little more fair to it. But if you love that, I totally get it. Like I totally get loving this movie even more than you liked it, Trill. Like not even saying you like. If you like slashers, if you like this type of thing, that is like way up people's alley, and I totally get it. I think in that sense they did a good job, and the audience actually rated it higher than you, Trill. They gave it a 71.
So. Mm, yeah, loving it would be very strong, but it was very the unexpectedness of me liking it and thinking it wasn't a bad movie adds some to the score. But it was ridiculous enough for me to believe in it as kind of like this alternate reality where like just things are so stupid in that sense. And I thought Aubrey Plaza was very, very good in this role. She played a very, very Aubrey Plaza role. And yeah, it was fine. Look, I'm not gonna sit here and say you should definitely go see this movie, but I think it was a lot better than I thought it was gonna be. Yeah, yeah.
Love it.
I mean it was better than I thought it was gonna be too. There's when something for that.
When the melatonin kicks in, the melatonin kicked in during my last sentences. you can hear it kicking in.
Teddy Ruxpin is slumped.
This is the latest we've ever recorded the pod, by the way.
Teddy, the new doll, Teddy Cuxpin, and just sits in the corner.
I wish I could do that. I don't know what Teddy Ruxpin sounds like.
Just kind of like Ted. Kind of. Okay. Same idea. Just not a Boston accent.
My credit card number is 24.
Do you have Cash App?
All right, Child's Play. It's actually not buttered. It's 65 average, so it's officially not buttered. So sorry. But let's move on to Toy Story 3. Or excuse me, 4. There's a fourth one. What the fuck? Toy Story 4 set basically right after Toy Story 3. That's kind of the sense I got, right? Like it's set almost directly after, because two was a little after one, and then 3 was basically real time after when 2 is released. Woody, Buzz Lightyear, and the rest of the gang, that's giving Buzz a lot of credit, embark on a road trip with Bonnie and a new toy named Forky. The adventurous journey turns into an unexpected reunion as Woody's slight detour leads him to his long-lost friend Bo Peep. As Woody and Bo discuss the old days, they soon start to realize that they're worlds apart when it comes to what they want from life as a toy. They're all back, except for the ones who've passed away. Rest in peace. Tom Hanks, Tim Allen. Yeah, Don Rickles, big rip. Though I think some of his voice was used.
They used some of his voice, but he just, you know.
He's dead. Rest in peace.
Big rip.
Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, Keanu Reeves, Tony Hale, Annie Potts back as Lil Bo Peep. Jordan Peele, Joan Cusack, Keegan-Michael Key, Christina Hendricks, Wallace Shawn back and Rex. Great voice. John Ratzenberger back as Ham. He's in every single Pixar movie. Estelle Harris as Mrs. Potato Head. The list goes on and on. Laurie Metcalf, Jeff Garlin, Kristen Schaal, Bonnie Hunt, Betty White was in it, Carl Weathers, Mel Brooks, Carol Burnett, Carl Reiner, June Squibb. I mean, the list on and on. Iconic voices.
Bill Hader.
Bill Hader was in it?
Bill Hader was a carny.
Yeah, I thought the guy running the whatever the game machine that like Ducky and whatever were on. I thought that was Bill Hader. I just couldn't tell for sure.
He's been in three different Pixar movies now, or no, Disney animated, because he was Wreck-It Ralph 2 was not Pixar. But he's also in Inside Out. Okay, Toy Story 4. I fucking loved it. I thought it was great. The worst of the four, but that's not like a knock. Being the worst of the four Toy Stories isn't a bad thing. I gave it a 93. That was one of the best movies I saw this year. Thought it was great writing, perfectly paced, very funny. Story doesn't resonate as much for me. I think that's the difference, like especially comparing to the other ones. I thought it wrapped up perfectly, and we'll get into that in a second. If you don't want spoilers for Toy Story, by the way, you should be skipping ahead. I gave it a 93. The audience gave it a 91. Ken Jack, you already reviewed it online, but what did you give it? Give some reminders of your thoughts.
I believe I gave it an 89. I thought it was very good. I think it's my third ranked Toy Story movie. I have two right below it. I think it was very good. It's just, I think the strength in it comes from its pacing. The animation looked great as always. I think they always find a way to make it look a little bit better. And obviously, there's just advances in animation. But it looked really, really good, especially the one sequence we'll talk about a little bit later. Voice cast was all great as always. And I think the one thing that it added was there was an element of humor to it that was unique to the franchise. And I think that the one thing that I was afraid of going into this is that it would just be a rehash for money. And it didn't feel hollow. Like we always, like Charles is a big fan, and I'm a big fan of saying things feel heartless. This didn't feel heartless. It felt unique. It felt like they were trying to hit a different vibe here, and they did that right.
Yeah, I give it a 90. I loved it. I liked it a lot. I loved it, whatever. You're right, Jeff. It likely is the least strong of the three or four, or compared to the other three, I guess. But it's not so far away from them that you're thinking it wasn't worth making. And I know in a lot of the lead up, we talked about why are they making this, and it could have gone either way. Could have just as easily saw this movie and said this didn't have to be made. And I don't think it had to be made, but I'm glad they did it upon seeing it. It hit there's a lot of nostalgia with these characters too, right? Like, I mean, shit, I was 11 years old when I saw the first Toy Story. These toys and their story have been with me the last 20 or so years of my life. So there's that element too. But what I liked about it is it was different in the sense that it really mixed up the cast a little more than previous Toy Story movies. And that's what we alluded to a little bit with the Tim Allen commentary on the first one. It was very Forky heavy. I didn't expect Forky to be in it as much. But they kind of made a lot of the characters take a back seat for better or for worse. I don't think you got as much of the gang as you probably got in other movies, and that was fine. I liked what they did with the bad guy. I thought that was pretty neat. We can talk about when we get into spoilers. And yeah, it was very solid. It probably definitely is in the top half of Pixar movies. They say every Pixar movie they are trying to showcase some sort of technique or talent that they picked up along the way, whether it be like how to better animate pet fur. I think Coco was about like skeletal movement or just something like that, or maybe like them playing the guitar or those sort of animation techniques. I don't know what the specific technical expertise that they're highlighting in this movie was, but I'm going to Google it. So we'll see.
Let me just start with that. The animation, unbelievable. Like even compared to Toy Story 3, unbelievable, which is insane to think about because Toy Story 3 looks so good. But I mean, it's been 20 plus years since the first one came out. Cool. So it shouldn't be that shocking, but go do it. Like, do a fucking side by side of like Bo Peep and what she looks like now, or just any of the characters, or like what the dog from Scut. Was that the name? Dog's name? Scut?
That sounds right, yeah.
Scud? Look at the dog, and I think Insider is the Twitter account or like the website who did. They did a video comparing everything. Look at the dog compared to the animals or like even the Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele stuffed animals here. Unbelievable. The animation's I'm seeing an IMAX finally. It's going to look unreal. Mm-hmm. Very excited.
The best looking animation in this movie was from near the end when it was dusk outside and they were going back somewhere, which we'll discuss, but it was at the carnival and then pulling away in the RV looked like it was cartoonishly real, but it looked almost real. It was pretty crazy. So it's funny how they've made these movies look a lot better while also like in your mind looking the same as the original Toy Story, but they don't. I mean, very similar character designs. That wraps it up for the non-spoiler part for me, Jeff. I'd love to get into the meat and potatoes, if you know what I mean.
Well, they should have already skipped. So I know, Kendrick, you liked Forky, which, I mean, I wanted to hate Forky. I wanted Forky to be the worst character of all time. And I love Toy Story, but Forky, the idea of Forky pissed me off, and I was proven very wrong.
Yeah, I'm a Forky guy. I thought I would go in hating him because I thought – but I just like him. I enjoy him. I enjoy everything Tony Hale does. He can do no wrong in my eyes.
I liked Forky. So what I felt like this movie was, and I don't know, like maybe smarter people have felt the same way, so maybe it's not an original thought, but I felt like Forky was supposed to be us as an audience, experiencing this Toy Story universe from the outside anew for the first time. And I felt like the end was also supposed to be like us as Woody being left behind by the Toy Story universe, happy where we currently are. I feel like Forky gave like a unique perspective on being able to interpret the Toy Story universe and kind of the feelings of Woody, which are very similar to feelings he had in old movies, but kind of leading Woody down that journey of like, you know, maybe still not being over Andy in a way that's maybe not expositional, that, you know, has some natural dialogue around it. And then when he, you know, him and Bo Peep get left behind at the carnival, I kind of feel like that's us just saying like, okay, the rest of the toys are going their own way. And like, we're supposed to be with Woody. And it was like a nice sentimental breaking point where it's just like, if that was the closure we're going to get from these movies, I'm completely fine with it.
Maybe I'm
reading into Toy Story 4 too much, which I probably am, but I did like the character of Forky because it was like this, you know, first off, Forky thinks he's trash, which is very relevant to me. But second off, he's just got this scared take on the universe and being brought into a new, and I felt like through that you were able to, you know, that he was able to be more natural with Woody and kind of hearing Woody's thoughts and motivations for like where he's trying to find himself in this toy universe.
I think that's a really good way of looking at it.
Actually. So you're saying he's a MacGuffin for exposition.
Yeah, MacGuffin. He is definitely a MacGuffin.
I think the ending was sentimental in the perfect way. And I haven't thought about it looking at it like from our eyes either, though. I do like that, kind of like a telling us how to feel, like, okay, time to let it go now. But I do think the ending just in itself in the movie, I think did work perfectly because he did get that closure, but I mean, I guess it's manufactured because now they're telling you he didn't, but he got closure in a different way. And they were able, this sounds so stupid talking about toys, by the way, but I digress. I like the way they did set that up, though, because there was more to that story and more to like Woody as himself, because Woody always just was Woody, where you knew there were other toys thinking other ways. So like they found a way to twist it and tie it in a way that was still fresh, which is just kind of unexpected. Like I know I shouldn't like not expect things from Pixar, but like Cars exists, so I'm not going to fully give them the benefit of the doubt, and so does The Good Dinosaur. So I was pleasantly surprised by that. And the villain thing was another thing that I was surprised by, like, because we've had big bads. We had Sid. And then we had Stinky Pete, shout out Kelsey Grammer, Frasier. And then we had Lotso, Bear. And they all kind of did the same big bad thing. The movie message was different, but this one didn't really have a big bad. Like, she was a bad like guy or a bad girl, but her motives were different. And her motives had an end game of positivity, I guess.
Yeah, where you know, Lotso had a shot of redemption, and he didn't take it. And this one, I felt like the big bad had that redemption and then took it, or the plot was able to give Gabby that redemption. So it was nice that we just didn't see her get like, you know, so Lotso basically got put in toy hell, right?
Yeah,
like that's what happened to those guys. Like they, and that's the dark side of Toy Story 3. They don't tell you they got put in toy hell. they went to hell, and we didn't get that here. So it was nice from that respect.
I mean, it's one of those movies where I'm probably never going to think about it ever again after we stop talking about it. It's not going to leave a huge imprint. I thought it was funny and a very well made movie, but it's not one where I don't think the lesson or anything much about it is going to stick with me forever. And that's a bad thing to say about a movie I just rated in 89. But it's just, I think that's where I'm at with the franchise.
No, you're right. It's one of those movies that, like I was saying, it didn't need to exist. I'm glad it did, but it doesn't have a message that's further than like what you'd expect out of a kids movie. And it didn't have a message that was much different from most of the other Toy Story movies.
I'll say this. Tom Hanks said that he cried during the moment. I don't think that was a cry-worthy moment. I don't know if I'm alone in that. I just didn't feel it the way that I thought I was going to after Tom Hanks hyped it up like that.
No, because what that did to us is that expected us to have a moment in the Toy Story universe that was as impactful and emotional as the incinerator moment, and that's just never going to happen. Like that was a. I mean, that shit was dark.
It was like. That's one of those ones where, like, when you leave, you're like, what the fuck? Like, do they really? It was like one of the greatest bait and switches of all time in a movie. Because, like, they prolonged the shit out of that. They were very close to them. And you know they're not going to die. But even then, you're like, oh my God. Like, it wasn't them just falling in and then immediately getting out. They were just falling into the molten pit holding hands. Where this one, like, I can see why I don't know, Kendrick, you agree with this. I can see why he would have gotten emotional, right? Like, if he was doing that dialogue with Tim Allen, who had three lines in the movie, like if he was doing that dialogue with him, maybe. But like for me, like I got goosebumps a little bit. Like I was like, oh man, like damn, like they're breaking up. But I didn't get that Toy Story 3 where it was like lining up perfectly with like me going to college. I was already in college, but like I lined up kind of a bit with Andy. That was this was more of like bitter, like oh man, like ooh, got like a little some feels there. But I'm not gonna fucking cry over that.
Yeah, the incinerator.
I was more upset when he never got to bust it down.
Well, the incinerator's on par with Jangles the Clown in terms of dark emotional Pixar moments, I think.
Who?
Jangles the Clown from Inside Out. Remember like when he sacrificed himself, basically?
Who's Jangles the Clown?
Yeah, do you don't know who Jangles the Clown is? That does sound like something I'd make up, to be fair.
It's a character, but it's definitely not. It's Bing Bong the elephant, like raccoon elephant.
Oh, was that it?
Jangles the Clown. There was a clown in Toy Story 3.
No, I thought Jangles
the Clown was... All right, what's the image, the no-context image we're tweeting for Jangles the Clown?
No, I thought Jangles the Clown. I guess whoever it was in Inside Out. Was it Inside Out, like, where that sacrifice was made?
Bing Bong sacrificed himself.
Yeah, it was Bing Bong. I'm sorry. I don't really know Jangles the Clown was in Inside Out. Tim Allen, was he in this movie?
Barely.
What's the deal with that? That's weird. Whoa, that's weird. Yeah, it felt like Buzz Lightyear was. It felt like Trixie got as many lines as he did.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was closer than it probably would have been expected. He did have a few moments where he was kind of with them on the adventure, but it was Bo Peep. Bo Peep took the role of Buzz in this movie, essentially.
Yeah.
And Forky to an extent.
Which I don't really mind, because it was something different, but it also was just weird, because you think Toy Story and you think Woody and Buzz.
Yeah, and I
think...
No, go ahead, Ken Jack.
I think that it's probably for the best. Just kind of... The whole point of this movie is, right, is them moving on from letting the old things die. Like our good friend Kylo, beefy Kylo Ren says... So, you know, moving things on. I think they actually kind of left room at the end of this for a fifth movie.
Woody,
I think there's some room for improvement.
Woody force projects himself to the antique store.
Into Andy's bedroom while he's typing down in college.
He force projects him, but he looks like Woody from Toy Story 1, just de-aged.
His animation was worse. I should have known.
The biggest inconsistency with this movie is they went back to an antique shop at night, and we all know antique stores are not open past 4 p.m. on any fucking day.
Ever. Very true.
Ever. The 89-year-old woman who runs the antique store is not keeping that store open past 4. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Jangles the Clown.
So Jangles the Clown, confirmed Inside Out character, Trill. Much apologies.
I guess.
About Bing Bong.
Bing Bong was a character I was thinking of, but I'm pretty sure Jangles existed.
Jangles did exist. We're going to go with yes.
Okay, thank you.
I guess that's it. Very funny. There was a really cool Star Wars reference. There was a Kenner Obi-Wan Kenobi in the pinball machine. Oh, Keanu Reeves.
Oh, yeah.
Duke Kaboom. I mean, it was a very funny movie. The writing was it was the best writing, I think, out of any of the Toy Story movies. The writing was fantastic.
Well, the funniest part about Duke Kaboom for me is I saw the stills of Duke Kaboom, obviously, leading up to the movie. And then in the movie, he's significantly smaller than Woody and Bo Peep, mm-hmm. which I thought was pretty funny.
I assume he's going to be their size as well.
Yeah, I liked it. It. You know, do you guys think that this is it? Like, are they going for 5, or do you think they're going to close the door on this whole story of toys?
I mean,
I think that there's one thing that will decide that, and the answer is money.
That's true, and it's not doing the crazy numbers that they were hoping, so maybe not.
Was has You Got a Friend in Me been in every Toy Story movie?
In some way, shape, or form, I believe the answer is yes.
Because we got a little bit of that at the start. I was pleased. Can't have Toy Story without that song.
The opening was great. I like the opening that we got to see Andy, too. I thought that was pretty cool. I like seeing Andy.
Yeah, I'd like to check in with Andy. You know, there's a lot of similarities between the two movies we saw this week. The both have Andy in them, who own toys. And, that's about it. Get some dolls.
I was kind of hoping for a Sid reference somewhere, because we got Sid in Toy Story 3 as the garbage guy.
We could have made him a carny, dude.
I know. Well, I thought the carny might have been Sid. So the carny, the Pizza Planet reference, because the Pizza Planet truck is in every Pixar movie, is actually a tattooed on the leg of the carny running the carnival game. So there you go. That's where it is.
Maybe they finally connect the Annabelle creation to Toy Story with Insidious. That's the way they finally get to connect the dots.
Oh, so yeah, I'm looking forward to the Easter eggs to go back and watch and find where everything is. I think they're online now, so I'm going to do that on the old next watch. I guess that's it. Audience gave it a 91. I gave it a 93. Trill a 90. Ken Jack an 89. Very much buttered. One of the best movies we've seen this year. By the way, I did my half year movie rankings. Ken Jack, you filled out some as well just to catch up. Not a great year for movies so far. Like, aggressively mediocre. There was a huge drop-off after, like, the top 10 or so movies.
Yeah, it doesn't look great. I sorted them all by my ratings, and I was like, wow, there was not a lot of good stuff this year. There it is. I don't know if it's that surprising, because last year I felt people shit on last year, and I thought last year was pretty decent.
Yeah, last year was stronger than I think most people gave credit for. Right now, this year is struggling, but there are some big releases coming out. It is this year was very backloaded, and I know Disney's a big reason why people didn't want to fuck with Avengers or like The Lion King. Now I think that stuff's going to fade a bit until Star Wars. We're going to get some like the fucking meat. We're going to get the Once Upon a Time in Hollywoods. We're going to get the Brad Pitt space shit, like all that. I only named two: The Irishman. We're going to get all that stuff. Cats as well. That's the most important one.
Yeah, you know what? I last year we talked about it with the award season. It was a very bad year for like those premier prestige movies that typically win those awards. You know, our thoughts on Bohemian Rhapsody, etc. I felt like there was a lot of good stuff in the middle, though, of 2018. Just kind of stuff that maybe never get nominated, but here I just don't. It's few and far between. You got some standout tentpole franchises, and you got John Wick, and you got Endgame, and you got Toy Story 4, obviously. And there's been a few movies that, like Booksmart, I really liked. But I don't know. Like, maybe we just need to start reviewing some like more obscure shit, like that come out into the theaters that like serve IPA and some stuff. You know,
Yep, agree.
Classy art house theaters.
Yep. So we're going to be reviewing Spider-Man Far From Home in 2 weeks. And then another movie in the fucking, what was it, the Conjuring universe. So we'll get to that, though. We'll do some of the smaller ones eventually. Okay, Toy Story. We like Toy Story 4. Good time. Definitely go see it if you haven't seen it already. Child's Play. Trill, if you like blood and gore, Child's Play is a good time.
When did Good Time come out? Was that 2017?
Good Time, we didn't have this podcast for Good Time.
Yeah. Yeah. Go see Good Time. That was a good movie.
Pattinson?
Go see that now. Yeah. Yeah, you mean Battinson. Gotta call him
Battinson, yeah.
Yeah, that's his nickname. Okay. Wrapping up video game week, which we've talked a lot about on this pod, because video games, toys, they're all related. We did top five favorite sports video games on Sunday. Now we're going to do top five overall video games, period. Trill, I'll let you start it out, then I'll go, then Ken, Jack, then the audience. Top five favorite video games, any genre. Number five.
All right, number five for me is Red Dead Redemption 2. I feel bad putting this on my list because it's so recent, but it is one of the top five video games I've ever played. It's a shame that these games take 8 years and countless amount of man hours and how many millions of dollars to make, because I want more of them. And then it also sucks that, like, when I finish it, I just don't want to replay it. Because I wish somebody could wipe my memory clean and I could go replay Red Dead Redemption 2. I remember getting to a point in that game where, like, I checked online and I wasn't, like, halfway done with the game, and I already felt like I played it for hours and hours. The world's so immersive, and Arthur Morgan's one of the best protagonists I've ever played as in a video game. So I really enjoyed that. And then you get into the whole hunting.
God damn it, Dutch.
You always got a plan, Dutch. Anyway, you get into the hunting, and it's like a whole other aspect of the video game. I would just sit there trying to find a white crocodile or a white buffalo and just wait and try to hunt them for that sick apparel.
I'm surprised you had anything newer than like 20, maybe not, because you do like the newer movies, but especially newer video games. But yeah. I'm surprised you had something this new on your list.
Well, video games to me is like, I have two older games on my list and then three newer games. It's one of those things where, like, I like to grade old video games on a curve, but I, like, honestly, I couldn't rate, like, Legend of Zelda Link to the Past over Red Dead Redemption 2 as one of the best video games I've ever played. Like, if the list was in 1998, I might have put Link to the Past number one, but video games and what they're able to do now is just so much better. And that's why I don't really get the whole retro gaming phase. Like, I think it's important from just understanding a technological and advancement perspective, but just for, like, general quality, no, sir, give me the newer stuff. It's way better.
Okay, fair, very fair. Number five for me, the original Halo Combat Evolved, the original Halo. Some of the best, like, hangout times with my buddies, just playing that offline, you know, multiple controllers, a little fucking Blood Gulch. Classic, as classic of a video game multiplayer map you can get. I don't need to go that much into it. It's Halo. It's the original Halo. Just loved it. And I, by the way, I fucking sucked at Halo. I was so bad. I mean, just, we would play 2-on-2. I was an incredible liability. But
I hate the sword, dude. I hate the plasma sword.
Energy sword?
Yeah, I hate that shit.
Damn shame to hear it.
Yeah.
Were you a fan of the energy sword?
I was a fan of anything other than the assault rifle, but I was a through and through DMR guy, or battle rifle in the earlier ones.
I was terrible. I was awful. I got better at later versions, though. Maybe we'll get into that. Ken Jack, number five favorite video game.
My number five is The Elder Scrolls Oblivion. I think that's one of the best RPGs probably ever made. It's fantastic. The main storyline is so fucking good. It's like, feels like you're playing a movie, almost similar to how you put Red Dead on your list, Trill. This is just like, it's such an immersive storyline, especially for the time it came out, like fucking, I mean, like 2006 or something. It was so very extremely well made. Like, the graphics were great for the time, and just the combat system was sick. The inventory system was awesome. The side quests were all great. It's Sean Bean in there as a Martin Septim. It was great time. If you haven't, if you grew up around the same age as I am, I'm sure you're a big fan of the games. And I think it's better than Skyrim. Some people say Skyrim's better, but I'm a big, or some people actually say Morrowind is better, the earlier one. But I'm a big, big Oblivion stan.
Yeah, I never really got into those games, but I think I'd like them.
Yeah, they're really fun. I still remember every single time I would do a run through with a new campaign, I would do the same mission like relatively first, which is like you have to clear out a ghost house in Anvil, which is like the cool port town, and like you get basically a 5,000 gold house for free, but you just have to do this big quest thing as part of it. I loved it.
But if it's one of the best in your opinion ever, high praise.
Yeah,
I mean these types of games. I mean that hasn't been talked enough. But I used to be absolutely terrible at video games. It was embarrassing. Madden 05 for the audience, by the way. Number five for the audience, Madden 05, which isn't entirely shocking because it was number one on their sports list, and I figured it would probably creep on here. It's the same kind of general voting pool. Trebon's number four favorite video game.
Number four for me is Castlevania Symphony of the Night. This is the best 2D platformer that I've ever played. It mixes, I played it like back when I think this was more of a novelty or more of something that was new to me, but it mixes RPG elements with the side scroller, which at the time was awesome. I still think it's the best side scroller ever. I do think it has one of the worst English translations I've ever heard, but that adds to the charm of it.
Was that the one where if you get hit, your clothes fly off?
No, I don't think so. This was the one with Alucard, Dracula's son, which is just Dracula spelled backwards, but but it was cool, man. Like it was very Metroid like in the sense that you got upgrades and visited new parts with those upgrades and got experience points, and then you saw the damage on the screen. I love that game.
This is not your Castlevania. What's the Castlevania that people hate? Is it the second one, Simon's Quest, or people like that?
That sounds familiar.
It was whatever one the angry video game nerd didn't like. I want to think it's Castlevania. Yeah, it might be Simon's Quest. I think Castlevania 3 was pretty well received. I don't know. The Castlevania games for the NES were all very hard when I was growing up, so I didn't like them that much.
Yeah, I think he said that Castlevania's Simon's Quest was impossibly hard, if I believe to be correct on that one. Okay, good pick. My number four, I'm going to throw it back to an older system, a little Game Boy. That's Pokemon Red and Blue. I still, to this day, regret not capturing... Oh, man, I got to say the name right. How do you say the kangaroo one? Kangaskhan?
Oh, yeah.
How do you say it? I was told I said it wrong.
It was Kangaskhan.
Yeah, I thought so. You had to capture that with a special ball in like that fucking zoo. And I'm getting this wrong too. I know people are going to be mad. It's like in like a zoo or like forested area.
Yeah. The zoo zone or whatever.
That's the only fucking one I never got. And that just to this day, I don't think about it often. But when I think about Pokemon every now and then, I think about that. And that's just disappointing. But otherwise, I mean, I played the hell out of it. The first one I had was Blue. Then I got Red.
Ooh,
the same thing, really. But
were you a Charizard guy?
I did love Charizard.
Yeah, you seem like a Charizard guy. I'm a Squirtle guy.
I was a Bulbasaur guy.
Ooh, there we go.
Big green. I had the yellow one as well, but the original Pokemon Red and Blue that kicked it off for me. It's nostalgia. We're throwing a lot of nostalgia in here for me. So that's my number four, Pokemon Red and Blue. Ken Jack, number four.
My number four, and my list is definitely going to deviate a lot from the listeners here, I think mostly because I played a lot more PC games growing up than console games. But it's Battle for Middle Earth 2. I think it's one of the best online systems I've ever played on, and like pretty much ever. And it feels bad because it's taken the place of games like Halo 2 and Call of Duty on my list. But like its multiplayer system was so fucking good. They had like a leveling system, really really good maps, and like really really, especially for the time, great connections with people, or like actual internet connections. Like their servers were great with people not just in the United States but like all across the world. And I had so much fun on that. I remember once me and my friend, they did clan battles on that. And there's this one clan called SOL. And what we would do is we'd go into like the lobby when they weren't there, and we would just put their clan tag on our name, and we'd recruit a bunch of people in the lobby into their clan, like 100 people. into their clan, and then when they would come back, they'd have to tell the people that we weren't really recruiters, and they'd have to kick all the people out of the clan. And I think after we did that for a week, they disbanded. It was where I learned how to troll, I think, was in the Battle for Middle-earth lobbies, Battle for Middle-earth 2 lobbies. And it's a great campaign and game, too. Witch King of Agmar, great DLC. Back when DLCs were actually fun.
I still like a good DLC every now and then.
Full-ass story DLC with all new gameplay, like real. It was really expensive, where now I feel like DLCs are like, I don't know, like a mission. And this was like a whole separate campaign.
Yeah, DLCs, like when I think DLCs now, I think like maps, very small things.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Tiny add-ons. Audience number 4, Red Dead Redemption 1. The original Red Dead Redemption, which I bought. I bought my friend Brogan, never got to play it. So.
You ever play the zombie mode in Red Dead 1? Very fun.
No, but I hear good things.
Very, very fun.
My disc ever gets unbroken on the Xbox 360, I don't know, and I'll play it. Trill, number 3 favorite video game?
Number 3 is Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. This is another new game that's on my list. I happen to think this is the greatest Zelda game ever made. It's close to a perfect game. I didn't like the weapons breaking system, but as you get further in the game, it doesn't matter as much. And I think they could do with a little bit more story and a little bit more of the Zelda theme. But other than that, like, this game is the closest thing to a revelation in recent history I can think of in terms of playing a game and something feeling new and something feeling fresh. It's one of the best open world games out there. If you haven't played it, you should play it. It's definitely worth buying a Switch for. Like a whole ass console just for this game.
I wanted a Switch until I played the new Mario Kart and Smash Brothers, and I never want to buy a Switch now.
The Switch, the $300 for a Switch is worth Breath of the Wild and just experiencing it. Or if you have a Wii U, you're one of the 8 people who have that, you get it for that too.
Do you know that it would cost you roughly $2,000 if you're very good at the games to get a Nintendo Switch at Dave and Buster's?
Yeah, but think of all the fun you're having playing like Terminator 2, the arcade game, to get those tickets.
It's true. You raise a fair point, sir. My number 3, I had it on my list the other day, so I won't talk about it much. Wait,
is there a way to get good at skee ball?
Oh, I've tried so many times. I can't do it. I'm so bad at skee ball. It's so embarrassing.
There's definitely a way.
Yeah, it's muscle memory, right?
I don't know. I'm just saying. There's got to be. And now I'm going to look fucking skee ball videos up later. Gosh damn it. All right. Number 3 favorite video game for me. Talked about it last week. It was my number 1 sports game, NCAA Football 14. It's the best. Bring it back. Fuck you, Mark Emmert, NCAA. I stink. I don't mind saying that. He's a crook. Guy stinks. Ken Jack, number 3 favorite video game?
Number 3, Rome Total War. I think it's pretty much as perfect as an RTS as you can get. I would have a number 1, but the game itself definitely had flaws. But it did have an amazing expansion pack. I think it had some of the best, like, I would say, like, bureaucratic management system, whatever you want to call it. The campaign was so much fun. I think I must have logged like days and days and days and days of playtime into it because it is with just different factions because it was that fun. And I think everything I've learned about Roman history, I've learned from that game because it really draws you in very much similar to Civ if you ever played Civilization. And it has the addition of having like the real time element of it. So you get to do unit tactics and all the other bullshit that comes along with that. The Total War franchise in general is just, I think, a very underrated, and some people would get mad about that, but I think it's an underrated franchise because it really is. All the games are perfect. Medieval 2, Total War, just missed my list. Shogun Total War is out there too. They're fantastic games. Rome 2, Total War, big miss.
That's what I was about to say. Isn't one of them you had on your worst video game list?
Yeah, Rome 2, Total War is a big, big, big miss, but it was just because they took it into such a level of like minutia and detail that they didn't need to. Like, they essentially, instead of having fun like building an empire and all that shit, you're like worrying about, oh shit, I don't have enough bread and grain to this city and this faction. Yeah. They're starving. Like, I don't want to be a fucking bureaucrat. I want to be like an emperor. Like, and that part of it, I know they did updates and made it better, and I have liked it more since they've updated it, but it was ponderous. I don't know how else to put it, but it was just exhausting to play.
I like ponderous.
Rome, Total War, Ken Jackson. So congratulations to that series because they've now been on your best and your worst. Audience, number 3, very classic pick, Mario Kart 64. That's another thing the video game nerd hated, that they added 64 to everything to celebrate.
I like Double Dash more. I don't know if that's crazy.
Double Dash, better game. It's a better game. Better maps, better characters, better game.
I just wish games would start calling themselves 64. And like, it released a sequel. It doesn't even have to be for Nintendo console. Just like Metal Gear Solid 64.
Assassin's Creed is almost on number 64, so they may as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Trill, number two, favorite video game.
Number two for me is Final Fantasy VI. This is the last old game on my list. I think this is the best Final Fantasy. You might be saying, well, no, Final Fantasy VII is. And I will say to you, you idiot. You big idiot. It's Final Fantasy VI. The last sprite-based or real sprite-based game. I think Final Fantasy IX had some sprite-ish type things. And then so did seven, but it was more like pre-rendered backgrounds. This one had the best story and had pretty good story for the time. Had a huge party system, which I really liked, and I played it at just the right time. It got me into Japanese RPGs, and for that, I'm forever thankful. I would love a remake, like a fully 3D remake of this one, but Square's decided they're going to spend all their time and money making like a four release Final Fantasy VII remake, which is fine. That game's good. I think Final Fantasy VI is better.
Interesting. I haven't played any of the Final Fantasies, but every time you talk about them, I want to.
It's not worth it anymore. They're just kind of one of those things that, you know, they're a product of the times. And then I just don't. The last good Japanese RPG I played was Persona 5, and that's so wildly different from Final Fantasy that I don't even know if they can make a good Final Fantasy anymore. To be honest with you, because Final Fantasy 15 was like 3 hours long, and it was just you and your bros hanging out around Coleman coolers. Like, they had Coleman coolers in the game. Like, you camped and your entire camping set was Coleman.
Jesus. And let's make another Final Fantasy movie. Solve that. Yeah,
they should do that.
My number two, it's a cheat. I'm cheating. I'm sorry. I'm cheating with this pick. But I have a great memory. I can't differentiate the fun times between the two. So I'm tying them. It's Halo 2 and Halo 3. I've never had more fun online. Fortnite in its heyday. Like, I still enjoy Fortnite. I still play it. But when Fortnite was really hot last year, when it was really picking up steam, that was a lot of fun. That comes really close. I only didn't put it on my list because I felt weird putting it on there. But it'd be top 10 for me because just, like, when you consider the moments of, like, when it was popular, Fortnite was a blast. But Halo 2 and 3 over that time period – those years when Halo went online and Halo 3 got even bigger online, I had so much fun. Middle school, high school, that was – it has to be on the list. It's an absolute must for me. But shout out Fortnite.
Yeah, no, I mean, Fortnite still obviously – it's probably at the highest popularity it's ever been. But when we started playing it, it was a pretty high popularity, but it was right around the time where – it was gaining critical mass. And then, you know, remember we used to like group chat in with each other to watch Ninja stream.
Yes.
We did. Yeah. Oh, that's when we paid for Ninja. We didn't, but we paid him and he read that really awful story.
My Jesus, God, Kevin.
It's a classic. Yeah. But yeah, that's my number two, Halo 2, Halo 3. It's cheating, but whatever. Ken Jack, number two, and then number one.
My number two is Civ 3 Conquests. Well, you could just say Civ 3 too. It's the Civ 3 Conquest. That whole expansion was so great. Civ 3 is just like one of the all-time strategy games. I'm sure other people will prefer like Civ 4 or Civ 5. I think Civ 3 is the best one. I still go back and play it very frequently. Anytime I'm on public transit and I have like a long enough, like an hour and a half plus, like back home on land or something like that, I will pop up my laptop and boot up a game of Civ 3. It is just great. I think it's like a very addicting game, and it's not like to the intricacy of the other Civs where like you have to focus on too much. It's very bare bones, very simple, and just fun. It's just an overall super, super fun, uncomplicated game, and I appreciate the shit out of it. Played endless amounts of it on LAN with one of my good friends growing up, and just had to give it the props it deserves for the amount of playtime I've given it.
Number two is a game that I know nothing about, so I'll let you guys talk about it if you can. And that's The Last of Us.
Oh, yeah. Shit. I should have had that in my list.
Now, fuck. Nothing about this other than the fact that I know it exists.
It's tough to say. I don't know if I could put it in my top five favorite just because, like, I've played it through the entire campaign through twice. It is, like, nearly a perfect game, but, like, it's one of those things where I've most of the things on my list I have an insane amount of hours played on. And like, I only have the exact amount of time it took me to play the campaign twice in Last of Us.
It probably should be on my list, but it's not.
It's like a perfect game. Like, that campaign mode was so fucking good. And the storyline is like, it's like you're playing a movie, like we were saying with Red Dead and what was the other one I had? Oblivion.
Yeah, well, that opening, like, opening nailed an apocalyptic scene, like, on a micro level. It was really neat.
Yeah. Oh, it's so sad. So I'm not going to say anything, but like, if you haven't played it before, go play it. I think they're making Last of Us 2 is in production, no?
Oh, yeah, it is. I think next year. Comes out.
Yeah, hell yeah, it's so good. Gonna see our old buddy Joel back.
Joel and Ellie.
Okay, number one favorite video game, Troll Bones, what is it?
It's Witcher 3, in my opinion, is the best video game ever made. It has the best story. The combat system is really fun. It's not the best combat system in the world, but the expanse of the world and just the lore behind it is so fascinating. And I just, like, for some reason, like, between this and the expansion, it's hard picking everything else, because on such a wide scale, I don't think any other video game has been as good as this one is.
Are you excited for the show with our guy?
Yeah, I am. I'm very excited. This is really cool lore. I think this is a show that people will get into, maybe not as much as Game of Thrones, but I could see people getting into it, because There's some really cool shit behind the Witcher books and stuff. I haven't read the books, but I've read the synopses.
I've never played The Witcher, but from the general vibe I always get from watching clips of it, I assume it's something somewhat similar to, like, what is it? What's the Middle Earth game again? Shadows of Mordor or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I The Witcher 3 is my jumping in point for that whole media franchise. It's, you know, CD Projekt Red, they're working on Cyberpunk 2077, so we probably won't get another Witcher game until the late 20s, if we do get one at all, which is kind of sad, but I think Cyberpunk's going to be really cool. Yeah, I just like it. I like Ciri, and I liked Geralt, and like all those guys.
All right, Troll Ball and Server Video Game, The Witcher 3, my number one favorite video game. This is one of the games I was good at, though. So let me just say that I was good at this game. I beat this game after a while, after battling. Who was it? IG88 gave me the biggest problems in that fucking junkyard. And that's Shadows of the Empire for N64. It's my favorite game of all time. Dash Rendar. First of all, none of this is canon, which is fucking ridiculous, because Prince Izor and Dash Rendar, those are great characters. The Outrider, his ship, which is just like a Millennium Falcon ripoff. Hans in the game, like as a cartoon, but this, oh my god, Shadow! I had the fucking Dash Rendar action figure, the Prince Izor action figure. I mean, I was obsessed with Shadows of the Empire. Once I beat IG88, it was smooth sailing from there. It's a great series. I actually read this book. I did a book report on Shadows of the Empire. Read the book. I read it start to finish, and that I can't say that about many books. But yeah.
So, I enjoyed it. Didn't they have like flying levels too in this one, or was it just like pure third person action?
No, did you ever play that? There's a race.
I'm thinking of Rogue Squadron.
There's a Clone Wars like racing game or something like that, which was terrible.
Pod Racer?
No, it was Clone Wars. It wasn't racing. It was like a Clone Wars game, but it was like you're only in vehicles. I don't remember the name of it, but it was very bad.
The SNES Return of the Jedi game was pretty cool in that you got Jedi powers, and one of the powers was you could throw your lightsaber around the screen and just hit enemies, which is really neat.
That's a great one.
I like that.
The prequel games were pretty good. At least I would say Revenge of the Sith, that game was pretty good on console. I enjoyed that.
Never played that one.
Ken Jack, number one. Favorite video game?
I just want to give a quick shout out to some of my honorable mentions really quick. Medieval 2 Total War mentioned before, Skyrim mentioned before. Assassin's Creed 2, I think, is probably the best out of the entire Assassin's Creed franchise. I actually liked Odyssey a lot, which I was very surprised by, but I liked that a lot. Gears of War is on my list as well. Gears of War is totally revolutionary, I thought. And Fallout 3 is on my list as well. And lastly, my number one overall, Fallout New Vegas. I think that it is one of the perfect games, and that for me it's a combination of the amount of playtime I've poured into it, which is a ton, and I think as far as being its quality as an actual game is like insanely high. It's a great, great main story mode. The world building is fantastic. You can go to all these like iconic Vegas and Nevada, whatever Southwest spots, and go gamble, go have like shoot shit up, kill some super mutants, do all these insanely intricate side quests. Like it would take you years, or like I would say like a very long amount of time to finish all the side quests before you'd even start on the main quest, which is on its own extremely long, and also has very, very good DLCs, which I guess is just maybe a calling card for some of my favorite games. But fantastic DLCs, and it's great. Great, great game.
So our favorite video games, mine, Shadows of the Empire, Star Wars, Trill, The Witcher 3, Ken Jack Fallout, New Vegas. And then the audience, do you have a guess? Quick guess?
Fortnite?
No, not Fortnite. No. It's been on one of our lists. Halo 2.
Yeah,
Halo 2's on there. Honorable mentions for me, Star Wars Battlefront 2, like the original Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Yeah.
Incredible game. Mm. And the only Call of Duty I ever played that I liked, that I was good at, was actually a recent one, Call of Duty Black Ops 3, which I know a lot of people hated because there's like jetpacks and shit. My buddy and I, we played it all the time, and I actually got good at it. Granted, I think everyone had left the game and played the newer version, so no one good was actually playing, but I felt good. So that was nice. I liked that game a lot. And then I played Fortnite.
Did you ever play Call of Duty Zombies? I logged a lot of hours on those too.
Not a big zombie. Then I got the new Call of Duty, like the one, like the World War II one or whatever, and I absolutely fucking hated it. Hated the weapons. Then Fortnite came out, or Fortnite became popular, and that was the rest of history on that one.
Yeah.
That's it. That's a good podcast. That was fun. We had some technical difficulties. We're going to sew it all up, though, so you're not really going to tell a difference. Other than that, you guys got anything else? We're reviewing next week Annabelle Comes Home. And then yesterday, the Beatles movie. Two very similar movies.
Where are the Beatles?
Where are the Beatles?
Danny Boyle. You're making a movie about me.
Danny Boyle.
That's it.
Danny Ruxpin.
This is the first time, by the way, we've ever recorded a podcast over the span of two different days of the calendar. Never done it before.
Yeah, sure.
For Ken Jack, Melatonin, Trill Ballins, and myself, we'll talk to you next week.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.